He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
All right, Andy, welcome to Beyond the Bend.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Cody. I really appreciate it.
Highly recommended from the man, David Wigrin. Just folded the damn Jarrito 12.9 at 5.5 and then at 5. So if Wigrin says have this guy on the show, I would obviously do it. So,
well, I appreciate your show. Time. Thank you very much. David's a beast. I've known him a long time, and I just appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to you.
Right on. Well, I want to get your whole backstory, but first, I want to hear about the first time you saw someone bend a piece of steel.
I've been watching some of your podcasts, and I've been thinking about that, and it's actually World's Strongest Man, Bill Kazmaier. I mean, I can't remember if it's 80 or 81. I saw Steve Weiner mention that no one had mentioned World's Strongest Man before, and I was like, dang, bro, that was my end. but yeah, it was the one where everyone was getting jacked up. I think a dude got injured, popped out. I think Kaz got injured. And when I was first watching these dudes bend this stuff, I was like, oh my God, like I couldn't believe what was happening. And then people started getting injured and dropping out. And I'm like, yeah, man, I don't know if I want any part of this. But I was like I think an early teen then. So, you know, it was a long, long time ago.
Right on. And it always stuck with it. What was the catalyst to you actually trying to do it? Did you stumble upon the grip board or like get the Dennis Rogers video or something?
Yeah, it's when I was around 40. I've always been a little bit of a adrenaline junkie kind of type, you know, need something in the CNS kind of to keep me going. And, was just kind of running low and found the grip board, checked it out, and I started, you know, trying gripping, which I was terrible at, and found that section in there, you know, steel bending, and checked that out. And I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. And I really couldn't believe what I was seeing. And got on the grip board, Ben Edwards reached out and said, hey, you know, if you like this section of the grip board, there's another message board called steelbenders.org, and it's not around anymore, but and he was like, you should check that out if you're interested in bending. And I did, and from day one it was nuts, man. There were guys on there doing stuff I couldn't even imagine. So I was like, I have to be part of this. So
right,
joined up, signed on, logged in daily, and to check out what was going on, and just tried to take it from there.
Nice. And what year was that?
That was probably, actually, I think it was like end of 2009 when I found the grip board. And I was still active in the grip board, trying to, you know, do different feats that they have posted, the blob lift, 5-10 pound plates, that kind of thing. But yeah, once I started bending, it just started really accelerating into just more and more of that. And the grip stuff kind of took a back seat for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems to be pretty common. It's like people might start with grip and then find bending and sort of like do less grip or maybe get heavily into the grip and do less bending. It seems hard to do everything at any type of high level once you get deep into these things.
Yeah, it turned into all I wanted to do was come home from work, do some sort of like cursory workout so I could just say I lifted a little bit, and then I just wanted to bend stuff.
I'm so happy you said that, because like when my coach who I had on, Scott Shetler, also old hardcore punk dude, that was like that and jujitsu was my connection to him. He's actually down in Georgia. It was like totally remote situation, but I had heard him on a podcast and I knew we clicked. So he wrote me up my first proper program. And at the end of it, it had plate pinching, you know, and that was like my kind of gateway into bending. And by the time I got my bag of nails and got used to this, I was still running that program. So I'd be like basically rushing through everything, rush through the plate pinch. I do everything, but just, it was like, I got to get all this done so I can get over there and figure out what I'm going to bend today.
Absolutely, dude. It was every day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I don't care that the older dudes are telling me to like chill and do it twice a week. I'm going at least every other day, maybe more.
I'll put it this way. I really think that it's such a unique kind of skill set, and the positions are so unique. If you're not already kind of trained in that way, like for me, when I started, I couldn't bend in any style except double underhand. Like, okay. I see all the double overhand videos and I'm like, oh man, these guys are killing stuff. Like, that's what I want to do. But I couldn't even get my hands in that position. So there had to be some time spent with just mobility, and that needed to be every day. I mean, if I did that twice a week, I probably never would have been anything except double underhand, which, I mean, that's an awesome style. There's nothing wrong with that, but I wanted to experience all styles, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Like, I love that there's all these facets of this thing, you know, it's like, it's just, I find it so interesting. And, you know, you get burnt out on the short steel, you go to the mid and the long or horseshoes, and then you throw snapping into the equation. It's like the never ending thing. And then sometimes the infinite quest is, like I said on last week's show, is like, there's something relieving about that. It's like, there's always going to be something to do. There's always going to be something, some way to challenge yourself to keep it interesting, as long as your body holds up.
Well, and you know, not to be the downer dude, but there's two aspects of it, in my opinion. I mean, there's one aspect where steel bending is a form of strength exhibition, and there's another form of it where steel bending can almost be like chasing that high, and kind of that's where I was. And you know, this can be maybe or not a cautionary tale, is that's all I wanted was the next bar or the next shoe. And you will meet your match at some point, and you know, at some point, it's no longer a viable pursuit. And, right. You know, that may not be a cool thing to talk about, but that's kind of where I lived. Was I could bend to 60D now. I'm like, what's the point? Now, if I wanted to train someone or help someone get started, I could show them how.
Yeah.
But for me, it was always chasing that adrenaline rush. It was always, you know, the win.
Yeah.
You know, and if you had a bar planned and you're going to come home, and this is, you know, big night video, bin big bar, and it doesn't go down, like, you've lost. So now you've got to regroup. You got to figure out how you're going to meet that goal. But at some point, it's just, you know, diminishing returns. And, you know, there's guys out there that don't seem to hit that wall. But for normal dudes like me, you know, it comes at some point. So, yeah, be careful out there.
No, I can relate to that a lot. And I've definitely had moments where you know, maybe I was reaching like my max or whatever for that time period, and I failed on something. And, you know, especially during COVID or whatever, when I didn't have a whole lot of other stuff going on, like, that was going to affect the rest of my day or night. Like, no lie about it, is,
you know, absolutely.
That was going to be a harsh thing. And there have been times where maybe I failed a bar and was able to redirect my efforts into something else that I could walk away feeling proud of that day. Maybe some other PR to some extent, but you know, sometimes not. And then that was just like a drag of a day, you know, but there were those times. And I think my friend Dave Nisbet, he was first guy to cert the Harito 12.9 at 5.5 braced. And I think that was after he attempted something else. And he said, like, his frustration from missing the first thing, it might have been snapping a gold nail. I'm not 100% sure on that. He just switched it over, and all of his anger went straight into folding the 5.5. So it's like, there are those times where you can kind of just like, all right, that's not working. Let me see, you know, and try this. But I also agree with you, and I'm sure a lot of guys have experienced that, there's going to be a point where it's just like, it's just not attainable, that next thing. And maybe you can dial it back and train, you know, but
yeah.
I think there's a rapid improvement involved with this, because people, especially it seems like recently, people are like just getting good very fast. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're just going to hit the wall that much sooner if that's the case, right?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's the availability we have, in my opinion, to knowledge now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I heard on one of your other podcasts that, you know, you could message someone, they'll message you right back, and you get some information really quickly. You know, it wasn't always like that. So the progression might take longer, which can, you know, could be a good thing. But at the end of the day, it's a strength and technique, you know, meeting application of force that allows, you know, us to do these type of things. I don't care how strong you are, you just hand someone a gold mail, they're not going to unbrace bend it the first time around, you
know.
Right.
No,
but you know, guys that Jason Bergman was a world's strongest man competitor. He was on steelbenders.org for a while, bend horseshoes. I mean, this is one of the strongest dudes in the world, and he could just explode some steel that you're like, I can't even imagine doing that. But it's funny that David pretty much always kept up with him. So, you know, there's something to show for the value of, you know, perfecting your technique, not just getting stronger, but perfecting your technique, which could have been one of the things that I never did. But what I'm getting at is, the more information you have, the more access you have to technique, the quicker you can evolve. And that can, like you mentioned, can be a good thing or a bad thing.
Sure. So. Yeah. Yeah. So take me back. Were you always, you said you were somewhat of a, you know, an adrenaline junkie, but were you always athletic growing up, or what was like that growing up?
Yeah. I mean, athletic-ish, you know, played a lot of soccer, played some football until like junior high. Went into just soccer full time, played some soccer in college. But just kind of always wanted to either, like, you know, jump off of something, you know, break something and run away. I don't know. There was just always that kind of throw an apple at a car when I was a kid, you know, or egg somebody. There's just always that kind of little adrenaline fix that I needed. And, you know, the further and further I got into just, you know, life and work and training, you know, it's kind of like I got to the point where, you know, it just wasn't there. And I'm like, I need a little pop here and there. And I thought grip might do it. It didn't. I love grip. I can still train grip, thankfully. It's good, but it's just not exciting like bending was. You know, bending, if you win or lose, you're amped, you know, but if you win, it's like the best day until the next day. You know what I'm saying? But if you lose, it's almost like I hear you, you lose a bend. And I can remember like losing some bad bends and just carrying it around and being like, oh my God. But using that to just get so jacked for the next attempt.
Yeah.
That then you get that bend. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. You don't want to lose, but I don't know if anyone out there has had like PR bends first go around. I'm sure there's some guys, but most of us know what it feels like, you know, to get your butt kicked by a bend that you're set to make and you don't, but then you use that to come back.
Right. Definitely. So where did the lifting come into play? Was that just from playing sports at a high level?
Actually it started, tore my ACL in college, had it reconstructed, had to do, you know, some rehab to come back from that. And, you know, back then rehabilitation or physical therapy isn't what it is today. So I was basically shown a couple stretches, shown a couple exercises and sent home. And then, they used to cast you back then. So my leg was in a cast for like 10 weeks. And when it comes off, I got one leg that's like a stick and another leg that looks like I used to play soccer. And so,
right. Well,
what do I do with this? So then it's, then it's going to the gym and it's squats and then it's, you know, trying to get back. And then you realize, hey, you know, lifting's kind of cool. And I'd always been into comic books and art. So a good friend of mine, Roy Burdine, directs the animated version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, name drop, or used to. He gave me like a copy of Muscle and Fitness magazine, like way back, like early 80s. And he's like, hey, you know, you can use these bodybuilder dudes to learn how to draw, like, you know, superhero type.
Oh, no kidding. Cool.
And I was like, man, these dudes are jacked, man. So once I started lifting a little bit, I'm like, oh, this is what those dudes did. So it kind of rolled into that a little bit. And I got into just lifting and working out just to try and get, you know, a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger.
Yep. Awesome. Yeah. Ninja Turtles might have been my segue into martial arts obsession at a young age, as I'm sure a lot of people probably my age were, you know. It's like that might have been the first exposure I had, like, to and sent me on a long path of being obsessed with all martial arts forever.
That's awesome. I got a funny story then that not many people will remember, but when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles first came out, they were a black and white comic book. Me and my friend Roy, like I mentioned, we used to collect comic books, and we're friends in high school. His dad was in the military. He got stationed in Hawaii. We spent a year apart, and then I went over to Hawaii to see him next summer, and he's like, hey, man, I got to show you something. Look at this. And he's holding up the first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and he's like, you need to start buying these things. These things are going to be big. So I take it. I look at it, toss it on his bed. I'm like, man, that's trash. I'm not, that's going to be nothing. And it's just like huge thing now.
Or, that's funny.
Yeah.
Right. My son got into it and he was watching the movies too, you know? And it's like, if you watch that first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that came out in like either the late 80s or the early 90s, that's, mm-hmm. So I'm from New York, like up in the Hudson Valley, like 2 hours north of the city, but have plenty of connections to the city. And that's like a pretty gritty movie for like a kid's movie or whatever. Oh, yeah. Like that, yeah. the whole like cinematography of it is all dark and old New York and stuff. It's cool. Like I was cracking up watching it. It's like
very cool.
modern Taxi Driver or something.
Yeah. Like I get it now, but back then I was like, yeah, these are freaking turtles, dude. It's going nowhere. So
right.
Yeah, I was wrong.
That's funny. That's funny. So you got on the grip board and the steel bender site. What was being said? Like, what was the progression that was being recommended at that time? Just like, was there the Iron Mind bag of nails happening, or were you just going to the hardware store and sorting stuff out on your own?
Yeah, it was like, it was kind of a little bit of everything. Like at that point in time, the steelbenders.org was like, David, Ben, some other early dudes were already there and they're already doing things that are like way legitimate. And, you know, you understand, like, how do they do this? And so the cool thing about that is like, at one point, I think there were like 12 members, you know, and I think all 12 would log in daily. So you got a lot of feedback really quick on how to progress. And the recommendations were, you know, just find some stuff you can bend and start bending it. Like that was really the recommendation. The bag of nails, I have actually still have an complete, full, intact, unbent bag of nails, because Iron Mind at that time, in my opinion, was one of the only like major companies that was supporting bending. They had the red nail roster. Like way before the gold nail ever came out. Yeah. And, you know, when I saw that, I was like, you know, I want to be part of that, but I didn't know how to, or, you know, how long it would take. And so, you know, the recommendation would be basically if you put it out there at that point in time, and things change and things are different, but if you put it out there in that point in time, a lot of the advice you would get would be buy Iron Mind pads. If you want to cert the red nail, if you put that out there at that point in time, you know, left that out, that's key component. If you want to assert the red nail, buy some Iron Mind pads and then find some steel you can bend and only bend in those pads. Yeah. And keep moving up, because some of the advice was you don't want to take that hit of having to step down. So if I bend the red nail in doubles, how long will it take me to work down an Ironman pads? And that's, you know, in hindsight, it might have been better mentally just to get the bar bent in anything. And then you know you can bend it, and then you step down in pads. But with that, you know, there's a pain tolerance, there's a confidence issue. And so any bend I ever did, double overhand or pretty much anything else at that point in time, was in Iron Mind pads. Yeah. From when I started bending to when I started the red nail, I didn't bend in anything double overhand other than Iron Mind pads. And that was a, I don't know. I don't know if that's the way to go. But I would say, like, for me, I'm not the manliest hands dude. So starting the process of hand conditioning from the beginning was beneficial for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. So what do you remember specifically, like what your personal journey was? Like, what was the thing that you could bend when they just said, like, pick something and just start bending it?
It's so bad, dude. It's like the little timber ties.
Yeah, it's like the twisted ones.
Yeah, it looks like a nail, but it twists. I think they're pop metal. Like, you can just break them. But I couldn't even bend that when I started. And so, but I was also using like washcloths.
Yeah.
reverse and double underhand. I didn't have any technique. So that's where I started. And then I think it went from that to like a 60D quarter inch cold rolled steel tine.
Right.
And then really what I did was, I would have one big bend a week, and all the other nights until I got mobile enough to get into the double overhand position, I would just bend 60D nails double underhand. I might bend 10, 20, 50 in a night, and my double underhand was never good. And, you know, but I was bending something, and it was exciting. And it was fun, and it was, you know, I was getting the feeling that I was moving towards, you know, a goal.
Totally. How was reverse in the mix there? Because it always seems like somebody, like, generally everybody feels most powerful double overhand if they can physically get themselves in that position. But then it seems to be really a 50-50 between which other people prefer. Like, I almost can't stand reverse. I just feel like so childishly weak that way. It's bizarre. And then double underhand, I feel like I'm decent at or whatever. I've heard people that are the complete opposite. They're like, oh, reverse is, I'm way stronger reverse, and double underhand, I can't understand it. So
yeah, reverse for me was horrible. Like, I have no I have no significant bends in reverse. At least I had a few at the time. Bender's Battlefield had their own like lists at the time, so it's kind of cool, because it's like your one-stop shop. You got all the dudes that you know that are bending, or some of the dudes that are bending, but you know, it's a little community kind of thing. And then at one point we had our own list, so you know, I don't think I ever asserted anything in reverse, but I had a couple double underhands that were you know, they were there. Reverse is like, you have to be like a forearm and wrist monster. Like to me, like, outside of guys that just straight pursue reverse style bending or have been doing it for a long time, the guys that climb seem to do well. Outside of that, you better be putting in some time. I don't think I've seen just a natural reverse bender. I mean, they're out there for sure, but I would say it is the least advantageous technique leverage wise unless you've trained it.
Right. Right. I wonder if there's a correlation, or there probably definitely is between hammer levering and the reverse bending, because I'm so that is funny that, you know, out of all this stuff we're talking about, it's like, to the untrained eye, you know, it's funny what people think is hard and what's not. I don't think there's something that looks as easy as the hammer levering until you actually try it. I picked up a hammer and I was like, what the hell? Like, I had this, I was like, people are like 16 pound hammer or something. And I'm like, oh, they're doing it easy. And then I like in Home Depot and pick up like a 6 pound sledge. And I'm like, damn, this feels pretty heavy.
Like, crack my head open.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, that's a great point, because I guess I lump those dudes, the grip dudes, into the bending dudes and gals, excuse me. I mean, if you're levering significantly, you'll have some reverse power, especially if you know the technique. But I consider that you're moving more in towards that wrist power, right, strength, you know. But good point, yeah.
Who are some of the guys that were really like blowing you away at that time when you came in? Obviously, Wigren. Who else was active?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if it was that as soon as I was on there, but Wigren, Chad Rakicki is double underhand monster. Mike Kraling was on there. He's a lever monster. He'll lever the what's the sledgehammer with the axe blade on it? You know what I'm talking about? Like, one side's a sledgehammer and one side has
like a maul.
Yeah, like a wood splitter, yeah, or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
He'd be like levering those, and I'm like, get hurt, man. Carl Donati was on there. EJ, yeah. Rich Beam. There was a crew that would check in daily and were bending daily or weekly, and it was a really good time. The guy though, he was a member. He didn't come on as much. Paul Knight.
Yeah.
I saw a video of him. He took an Iron Mine pad, just one. He put a red nail in it and he rolled it up like a cigar. And then he bent in that. And that's some legitimate stuff right there. Because the pain tolerance level there is extreme. Like, I wanted to replicate that bend forever, and I couldn't. I didn't have the strength. I didn't have the whatever it took to replicate that. But that was on the bend bucket list that I just had to put I just had to take a loss on. I did the same style with the, I think it was a 6-inch grade 8 bolt. And that was, that was a good bend for me. I mean, I was happy that day. But but then after that, you know, you came in, you know, another group of dudes. You mentioned JT earlier, Tommy Jennings. Of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Eric Milfeld. I don't remember him coming on Bender's Battlefield, but I used to watch his horseshoe bending videos, and you know, dude was the godfather in my opinion back then. Don't know him, never spoken to him, but he was a beast, and he would put up some legit horseshoe bending videos that, in my opinion, like David, Mike, and even Bergman, you know, started taking that stuff to the next level. You know, there's some just crazy stuff going on.
Oh, Milfeld is a beast, man. I've got the pleasure to get to know him just a little bit through messages, because I did a written interview with him because he's on the road, over the road truck driver, so he doesn't have a ton of time to sit down and chat with me. But I did a written interview with him, and real cool dude, good taste in music, did some jujitsu and stuff too. Like, we a lot of common ground there. And he has these crazy lifting videos still. He's still like squatting, you know, plus 400, maybe more, like very, very strong guy. And I'll tell you what, one of the most impressive bends that I've seen of his is 80D spike in singles. I don't see too many people bust that one out. People bend the 80Ds, but it's generally in doubles, and I haven't seen too many people do an ADD in singles. So that's a pretty gnarly one from Milfeld for sure.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion only, the smaller the rat, the batter the bend. I mean,
oh yeah.
You know, like when I was coming up or really getting into it, bare hand was like what really, really got me going. Like yeah. if you can grab something and you can bend it with nothing, then you yeah. own that. You own that steel. Like yeah. every step up. And you know, if you're watching this, don't take my advice because it's a bad idea to do that. To go down that road. But we're adults, and if you want to go down that road, go yeah. down it. Like, there's no bigger adrenaline rush than having just a piece of steel in your hand, and you have no wraps. And that's where yeah. some reverse came in. But if I was barehanded, it was more double under for the kink.
Yeah.
And then I would try to sweep. And sometimes that worked out and sometimes it didn't, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Are you familiar? I don't know how much you keep up with what's going on, but do you follow Bat Tibilov of Russia at all?
I don't. I follow Ivan. And there's a couple other guys from Russia that I okay. follow on Instagram.
So Bat did, I did a written interview with him too. And like did the whole, my brother-in-law who speaks some Russian helped me translate it and stuff. It was cool. He bent a red nail bare hand to 2 inches, the whole deal. And now he's working on a shiny bastard. This dude is legit, man. Wild. This was all this year too.
I'm actually glad that I haven't seen that because it would probably take my soul from me and I would just never pick up any piece of anything again. I would yeah. probably just like paint after seeing that. A red nail barehanded. That's unreal, dude. Yeah. And that shows yeah. you how far some of this stuff has come.
Right. Right. Yeah. He does these berserk, like hundreds, like the middle finger lifting, middle finger deadlifting. The dude is just a beast of like, all kinds. It's wild. I'll be sure to send that to you. He's like strict. I don't think I've ever seen him bend anything but bare hand. That's like his whole deal. It's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. So you said like when you're active that you're kind of just doing a bunch of bends, working on the style. What would like a typical workout look like when you're active bending?
So, you know, I might come home, I would either squat, floor press or deadlift or something like that. Just get going. And then initially a workout would be always trying to get into the double overhand position, which it took me a long time to work into that spot. So then I would step back and just start double underhand bending, whatever I had around. Like for a long time, it was just 60D nails. You know, I just buy the big box from like Lowe's or Home Depot. Yeah. I just bend those for volume. The cold rolled steel was, you know, getting a little expensive. So I might buy some of that and save that for a bare hand temp since it didn't have a point on it, you know, or a sharp yep. point.
Right.
But yeah, it might be 10, 20, 30, 50, 60 Ds a night. Wow. Not that exciting, but on the weekend, I would always have some kind of like attempt at a like a PR bend. Right. of some kind. So, you know, the way I looked at it, if you look back at weightlifting or, you know, powerlifting or anything like that, during the week, I'm trying to do my lower intensity volume work, technique yep. work. And then on the weekend, I would try to pop something big to see if I could get, you know, something out of that. I don't really see where I was starting from. I didn't really see my deficit as strength initially. I saw my deficit as poor technique and poor position.
Okay. Yeah.
So just trying to work more in that range, more volume, grease the groove, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
Just more of that is what I was yeah. looking for with the bending versus I need to train the strength to achieve this.
Right. And you said dealing with the issue of getting the bar under your chin, double overhand, that's a recurring issue. Many people struggle with that. What were some of the things that you found that worked to help you get, be able to get into that position?
So whether it was right or wrong, again, advice I was getting on the Bender's Battlefield was, you know, shoulder dislocates. How close can you keep your hands on the dowel or the pole? Just improving shoulder flexibility. For me, I think I had a huge limitation in thoracic flexion. I was trying to force position one night and just got a huge, huge cavitation, a huge pop just right below my neck. And after that, I had about 2 more inches. And then I had the same thing happen with my elbow, my right elbow. And then all of a sudden I could get into that position.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I just think continually stressing that motion caused something to, you know, let's let go, let this dude get there. And then it did. And that was it.
Were you already a physical therapist at this point?
Oh, yeah. I started practicing in 98. And this was probably, early 2010. So
okay.
I first started really trying to bend in January of 2010. And it was probably around maybe March or April before I could get into the double overhand position.
Right. So was it at any point where you're like, I'm going to damage myself doing this? Or was there like, were you not worried? Because I know like some people like worry about that position and, you know, like tearing pecs off or this and that. I was just wondering, coming from your point of view as a physical therapist, if there was any like apprehension with that style.
For me, like work is work. And yep. Once I got home, like, you know, no F's were given, pardon my French. Like I'd have the music on, I'd be jacked up and I'd be ready to go. And I really didn't care just because it was so exciting. It was something that I wanted to do. It was a goal that I had already kind of, I think most people that do this are a little, you know, there's an extra step, you know what I'm saying? And,
well, that's why I knew I could have the podcast. Because I was like, all right, if these people are crazy enough to bend steel, they don't even need to be the top of the food chain, like the most elite bender. I'll just talk to anyone that's bending steel and they're going to be interesting because it's only like a certain kind of person that's going to do this.
And that was the funny thing about the dudes on steel benders. And I keep saying dudes because we didn't have any female members at the time, but everyone was kind of the same. Like you don't know these people, but you're talking to them and they're like, yeah, I'm getting jacked up tonight. You're like, yeah, man, I am too. Like it was all like the same vibe. And once I decided that I was going to assert that red nail, like temporarily, you know, nothing else mattered. Now, you know, I've paid the piper. Do I regret it? No, I don't. I do it again in a heartbeat. Those were probably the 2-3, some of the best times I've ever had in my life. Was pursuing that and interacting with other people that were actively pursuing the same thing. And I mean, there were dudes on the board then that were trained to assert the red nail, and like most of us hadn't done it yet. David had, Mike had, Chad did it while I was a member. But there were other dudes that were in the process with you. It was so cool.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah, there is definitely like a community aspect to it that's like makes it very unique. And especially now with Instagram and stuff like that, it seems even easier to just like everybody is so positive. You know, it doesn't matter if the person's just bent their first 60D or, you know, like the 10.9 Harito, it's all the same. People are going to respond in a positive way. And it's probably just because of the size of the community, but that's certainly something that I've been blown away by. It's very cool. So how about the relationship? I always call it farm strength, but I just feel like there's a different type of strength needed to bend steel. It's like, and I'm sure there's plenty of guys that have a big bench, but you know, failed on bending a blue nail or whatever like that. I just feel like, and maybe it's just like the crazy component that we were just speaking of, but I feel like grip and bending and all of this kind of fits into this world of like farm strength, functional strength, old man strength or whatever. And that's kind of like what I was sought out to achieve with this was like, I want to go back to jiu-jitsu and have like the death grip, you know what I mean? And So what was your experience with that? Like, did you feel like bending made you strong in a different way than just lifting, or what was your experience with that?
I think it, to answer your question, no. I think it taught me more about, you know, who I was, or, you know, what my mindset had to be to accomplish certain things. You mentioned the farm strength, the old man strength. I think the people that have that naturally, like those are your top tier guys. You can see someone who's a world's strongest man competitor and someone who's not bending similar items. And those dudes kind of have it. And then you train in the technique and they're going to be your top tier. And there's other naturally gifted people that are going to kind of float into that.
Yeah.
When I look back on it, other than maybe some trunk strength from like brace bending, shoes, mid bar, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it had an effect on strength. I think where I was or what I was doing, my strength was whatever my strength was. My deadlift didn't change. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It required me to tap into, you know, a little bit extra or get a little CNS going. I mean,
right.
You know, I don't know if I have any public videos still on YouTube. They're all kind of unlisted because, you know, that's where I had to go. I had to have the music up. I had to have pneumonia. I had to go there to achieve that. And I don't have the farm strength, the old man strength. I'm just the dude that like saw it, loved it, decided, hey, no matter, at one point I just decided, no matter what, I'm going to bend this red now.
Yeah.
And at that point, that was the only goal I had in bending at all. And then after I did that, I'm like, oh, there's more. And I wanted to keep going.
Nice. And where did the other styles come into play? I'm talking braced and the horseshoes. Was that after you kind of explored the unbraced stuff and found your way that way?
Yeah. Once I could get in the position for double overhand and started bending stuff, you know, things went pretty good for a while. And then in a bare hand attempt, you know, this goes back to when we were talking about earlier about missing a bend. Yeah. I tried a bare hand cert for Bender's Battlefield, actually to try and take the spot from David. We were both kind of like, he's way more accomplished than I'll ever be. But at that point in time, we were both near each other on the bare hand list. And so I missed the bend once. And then I decided, well, tonight's the night. Like I'm not missing it. And, had an issue, you know, bar goes through the hand and then you get some stitches and then you can't bend for a little bit. And then all of a sudden it's harder to get in position. And now elbow kind of hurt. And, you know, you start cycling out of that. Cause I was old when I started this, I didn't start bending until 40.
Wow.
And then at that point I'm like, I'm not done. I still love this. I need to bring the shoes into a bigger focal point. But initially I got into mid bar and shoes to try and compete in the bite in 2012, Mike Kraling's comp. And Nadi won the light heavyweight division that year. And I finished second to him. So I initially picked up shoes and mid bar to go to that comp. Because I wanted to go the year before, but it was held on my wedding anniversary. So I'm like, I think my wife will chop my head off. Our anniversary. But the next year was like a month later. So I went up and had a great time. It was great.
Nice. You might not, you probably didn't see it because I think Carl is only on Facebook, but he actually just competed at Don Cummings contest this past weekend. And I think I'm not sure if he placed, but he was out there still bending. That dude has the longest active career in bending that I've spoken to. Maybe Adam Glass is up there too, because he like throws in a few bends here and there. But Carl has somehow maintained his body in a way, and he's just played the smart long game, and he's still at it, man. It's really cool.
I saw that. I saw Don Cummings, I think, posted on Instagram either yesterday or the day before that Carl and another gentleman, you know, forgot his name, I apologize, but they were tied for second. And then they had all these, like the medley time was the tiebreaker, but their medley time was the same. And then they eventually wound up with like a type of snapping competition to determine who would take the trophy home. Cause I think they tied for second.
Right. Right.
But there was only one trophy.
Him and Tom Flesher, another guy actually from New York, one of my first guests, he and Carl were tied, and I think they broke it with a laying snap that they had to do, which looked so cool. It was awesome.
Carl's a beast, man. He was always a beast, and I think he's done it the right way. I mean, he's stayed strong, he's stayed bending. From what I can tell off videos that he posted and stuff, his bends always look very well controlled. He may be freaking out on the inside, but he doesn't ever appear to be freaking out on the outside or exceeding, you know, his limitations. Yep. He's just staying with what he can do. And yeah, he's one of the longest tenured dudes out there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And he had that crazy feat that'll probably never be replicated of bending a red nail every 2 weeks or something for 10 years or something.
That's nuts, dude. Yeah,
he said he even bent one in the hospital when his wife was like giving birth or something. Awesome. When he came on the show, it was like, I was like, I think that one's gonna be yours forever, man. I don't think anyone's gonna touch that one.
He's got that, man.
Yeah. So you mentioned bar through the hand. What other kind of injuries did you have from bending?
You know, I when I was trying to force position early on, I was talking about my thoracic spine popped or cavitated, and then I had a lot more mobility. I mentioned the same thing happened in my elbow, but I actually had an avulsion fracture. I broke a piece of bone off trying to force elbow flexion, and it hurt for a sec, but then it didn't really bother me after that. You think, oh, you had a fracture. I mean, didn't bother me at all as long as I was bending very frequently. But after the little forced time off, 3 weeks later, that elbow was an issue, and it just had me making decisions. You know, like I said, at that time I was probably 43, not getting any younger. You know, what am I going to do? I'm already starting to run into bars that I can't bend, and probably won't ever be able to bend. Why don't I spend a little more time on the horseshoes, which doesn't require the elbow flexion? And I just kind of went in that direction and loved it. That's probably my most favorite bending style or whatever you want to call it that I was involved in. I mean, nothing's better than shoes, in my opinion.
Right. Nice. And let's talk about the shoes. And just what are some of the bends and feats that you're most proud of looking back?
So looking back, when I was on Steel Benders, the top shoe on the shoe list, which might be funny now, but it was the Kirkhart SSP 000. That was the number one shoe back then. Now, you know, a couple of years later, that got moved way down the list. But that was a legit shoe. Like, if you're bending an SSP 000, you know how to bend horseshoes. So it doesn't matter if it's the biggest or the hardest. It's enough shoe that if you don't know what you're doing and you don't have some technique and some strength, you're not going to bend that shoe. Yeah. And so I would see David smash him. There was a friend of David's named Henrik. He had one of the most badass SSP 000 bends of all time, where he just destroyed it in like, I don't know, seconds. And I'm just like blown away. Like, I want to bend this horseshoe. And the first attempt, after I'd been enough shoes that I'm like, well, I'm ready to try this. The first attempt, like I barely wobbled it. And it's talking like, you're straining to the point where the aneurysm's coming. Like, are you going to walk out of here tonight? Kind of thing. Yeah. I just wasn't going down, and it just didn't move. Like, it just wobbled. Yeah. And then spending more time at it, I got to where I fully bent one past 180. And then I got to the point where I bent 10 in a row. And It's not the biggest shoe. It's not the baddest shoe, but it was a gateway shoe at that time. And I really felt like, you know, once I had, you know, conquered that shoe, that I was like, you know, I was part of, you know, the shoe bender gang or whatever you want to call it, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I've been, you know, other shoes after that, but that was the one that like, I still have the one that's wobbled and I still have the one that's fully bent.
Oh, and nice.
And I keep them around because like, it's all here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just have to decide that you're going to do it and when you're going to do it.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's so much mental aspect to this. It's like I was saying to somebody recently, it's so unique because the real fight begins when your strength is sort of maximized, you know. It's like anything near max effort. We're talking, give it all you have. And then start trying, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you kind of give it all you have and then it doesn't move. And it's like, somehow you conjure up within yourself the force to get it going from there. You know, it's a strange thing. And I always feel like in my mental game with it, it's like, if I get a little movement, it's like, okay, boom, like a little bit more of the map is now like enlightened. So you know, it's like, it's just like that moment of movement is so, there's like so much endorphins and everything going on right there. It's like, oh, it can be done. It's like the craziest feeling. So what kind of like mental games did you play with yourself? What was the mental aspect for you?
So this is just a little example. So we were talking about bends that you miss and it like, it ruined your day. So I was trying to bend a 5.5-inch red nail and iron my pads, and I thought I had it and I missed it. And so I was just, you know, that wrecked the day, you know, wrecked the next day. And so the next week I decided I'm going to try it again. So I had the bar cut, had the nail cut, and I put it in my pocket and I went to work with it in my pocket. And then all day I would reach down in my pocket, and all day I'm just getting spooled up. I mean, now, and then I come home, warm up a little bit, work out a little bit, just get maxed CNS ammonia, you know.
Yep.
Maybe slap yourself in the chest a little bit, maybe not, whatever you prefer. Music's going, of course. And I just had that. That's the only way I could do any of this. I wasn't ever strong enough or orthopedically stable enough to just, you know, to just bend some steel. Like, I had to get a little extra, and that could be good or that could be bad, but I don't regret any of it.
Yeah. I've talked to so many people at this point and really covered this on so many levels. And it doesn't really seem like there's one way that's proven to be the way, because there's great benders that, you know, Don is very serene, got no music playing, just like the birds chirping. There's not a whole lot of physical things he does to get psyched up, and then he just does it, you know? But then there, you know, there's other guys that like get absolutely wild. You know, EJ was nuts. Pat Povilaitis, wild looking. Like, you know, a lot of guys get totally like fired up to do it, and that works for them too. You know, when I had Tanner Merkel on talking about grip stuff, he said when he's about to do like a lift, he gets himself so jacked up, he says he feels like there's ants crawling on the inside of his eyelids. And I was like, just, that's a wild image. And he just like gets so crazy. And
if you can find that place, you can bend some steel.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, it's like, it's a trifecta. There's a strength component, there's a pain component, and there's a fear component that may not be present cognitively or awareness wise, but your brain is like, dude, you're about to blow something out. It's hitting the D-cell switch all the time. And if you can find a way to just eliminate that, it's kind of like the 30% rule or the 10% rule, whatever it is. When you think you're at your max, you're only at 30% of your capacity.
Right.
So if you can flip off that kill switch, one or two things are going to happen. You're either going to get the bend Are you going to put a bar through your hand and go to the ER? It's one of the two. Like, right. That's it.
And that takes a lot out of you. You know, like anybody that's listening knows, you know, like when you go, whether you make it or you don't, you know, you're left with feeling fried. You know, hopefully you have the glory of completing the bend, but how did you navigate the ever-present overtraining aspect of this? Was it just pedal to the metal until the wheels came off, or did you do anything specific for recovery?
No, I mean, I think the only thing that I consciously did was, you know, if memory serves, and there may be a time or two where I'm wrong, but if memory serves, I think I started a relatively brief career, maybe 3 years of doing this successfully, or, you know, at a decent level. The main thing I did was I only went hard once a week.
Okay. Yeah.
I would do volume, or I would do technique. Like, once I got into shoes, my weakness was the crush. My kink was good. My sweep was okay. And my crush was non-existent. So what I would do is I would come down maybe one night, take a bunch of shoes that I kinked and swept, and I would only work on crushing them. And I would only work on the crush in a way that was controlled. I'm kind of low key. I'm just working technique.
Yeah.
And then maybe later on that week, then I would have a max bend. So for me, it was maybe one max effort a week and just a lot of technique and volume otherwise.
Gotcha. Nice. All right. Well, we're starting to wrap it up here. I'm going to take you through the medley, which is a rapid fire series of questions. So first one is favorite thing to bend. We're talking material. Is that the horseshoes for you, or?
Horseshoes, absolutely.
All right. Hardest thing to bend for you?
I got sent a horseshoe from David, and I think it was an AB6. The thing looks like a draft shoe of some sort. You know, I tried it, yeah. And, you know, maybe there's a micro wobble. I also took a shot at the gold nail unbraced when that came out, and that did not go well. So those two things still haunt me.
Yeah, I can't even believe anyone's ever done that thing unbraced. It's like braced, it's a chore. You know, it's like, I can't, and just the length of it, and it's amazing. I can't believe guys have done that. Hardest or strongest bending style?
Either shoes or double overhand.
And weakest style?
Reverse. I think we covered that.
Horrible. Yeah. All right. Something outside of bending, grip, strength training, this world in general, something outside of this that you like, that you enjoy?
Play the drums. Love music, you know, so I'm into that.
Awesome. Yeah, I play the drums too. My dad is a musician, and it wasn't really a choice. I was just enlisted to play the drums. My mom tells me the story of me, like, at 9 years old, like sitting back there at the bar, like in his bar band, like playing drums for him.
That's awesome. A few songs.
Yeah, I kind of segued into guitar mostly because of just the ease of picking up the guitar. Like, it's sitting in the other room, you know, next to the couch. Yeah. But I have a regular set and an electric set that I play around on some. I haven't been in a band in forever, but I played drums in some punk and hardcore bands and that whole thing.
Oh yeah.
When did you start playing? You play as a kid, or?
Yeah, I started playing in like 85, I think it was.
Oh, cool. Hell yeah.
And played regularly in bands, all that, up until 2004 when my daughter was born. And then I kind of left the band life just because it's a lot, you know, time and commitment, want to be home with the fam. Sure. But I still beat on them here and there. We'll have to catch up on on the drum tour. I'll have to, maybe we can like show each other some kits or something. That'd be cool.
Yeah, cool. All right. What's the one bend that's got away? You mentioned the red nail and one iron mind pad. Any other ones that come to mind that you wanted and didn't get?
That was the only one that had some meaning to it. I'd seen it done. I liked all of Paul's videos. And when he did that, it was just, the video was just so badass. I was like, I have to do that. And I just, it never happened and it never will. But that was probably the biggest one, if I had to look back, that got away.
Yeah. That's a brutal one. Jeez. All right. Who's the strongest person you know? This is open-ended and completely up to you. It could be like your grandfather or some guy from your town, or like if you know any world's strongest men competitors or something. I get all answers on this one.
Like overall, and I, you know, again, I'll openly admit I'm a fan, man, but it's David Wigren.
Yeah.
I mean, he has all different types of strength. You know, he's doing all the crazy gymnastic stuff. He's holding two chicks over his head. He's doing a flag. He's bending crazy stuff. And he was bending it back then and he's bending it now. And as you know, you know, just from a mass perspective, he's not the biggest dude in the world. He's arm wrestles. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, he is one of the biggest dudes in the world, but he's not one of the biggest dudes in the world. If you get what I'm saying. Yeah. That's a strong mofo right there. No doubt.
Oh, yeah.
You but I gotta throw in too, when Jason Bergman was on the Vendor's Battlefield, I had seen a World's Strongest Man before where he, and I didn't know who he was at the time, but he passed out during the car hold and like just got like catapulted to the ground. I'm like, my god, this dude just like went till he passed out. And then he's on Vendor's like just crushing horseshoes. I mean, all those awesome guys are strong too, but it's kind of like, I think it's very impressive when you have strength in pretty much all areas. You know, that's really impressive versus, you know, one or two.
Yeah. That type of gymnast strength stuff that David is doing is nuts. Like, it's just, that's a different type of strength in general. You know, you could have a big, you know, a huge total and be able to bend some steel and stuff like that. But there's very few people that are doing human flag and all that stuff in combination to being strong in those other ways. You know, that is very, very impressive.
Exactly.
Best piece of advice you were ever given. This could be about strength or life in general.
Just kind of once you commit to something, don't uncommit. Like if you make the deal with yourself and you say, hey, we're going there. And those deals, in my opinion, should be rare because you shouldn't uncommit. So if you lock it in, like, hey, I'm doing this. Number one, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew. But number two, don't quit.
Like, yeah.
Don't quit. When I decided that I was going to cert the red nail, that's the only thing I had in my mind. I was going to pursue that. I was doing it in Ironman pads. I went and certed it. If I was done after that day, I could check that off the list. But it was just so much fun. The people you meet, it's, you know, the camaraderie.
Yeah.
Just the pursuit of a different style of shoes. I just wanted to keep doing it. But just, you know, start to, you know, realize that we can all accomplish a lot more than, you know, we think. That sounds cliche, but I'm just saying, like, once you get something in your head, just lock it in.
Yep.
Just don't stop.
Right. Have you, did you read David Goggins' book? Do you know who David Goggins is?
I know who David Goggins is. I have not read his book, seen some YouTube videos about him, but that's where I was trying to pull like a 30% rule of 10, whatever it is. Like,
I think it's 60 and 40.
He's the one that I heard talking about that.
Yeah. I was going to say, great book. It's also on Audible if you get down, like I'm listening to stuff when you're driving or whatever. Don recommended it to me. I would say, now talking to you, maybe don't read it or listen to it because I read it or listened to it and it had me out rucking around my neighborhood. I just put weight in a backpack and had to go out walking for miles with like 80 pounds in a backpack. But that's a very inspiring book and it's completely about what we're talking about. Like, you know, like it's 100% no quit in that guy, and it's like maybe to some level of detriment, but you'll love it. It just might have you doing some crazy stuff because
I'll check that out.
It's cool, man. It's a good book. And funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails?
Oh, it's most of the time it's kind of borderline derogatory, like, doing what? Yeah, bend stuff. Like, what do you mean bend stuff? Like, the lady in the ED when I went in there, she told me to wear gloves the next time I tried to bend something. So yeah, that was pretty good. I was like, got it.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. And you mentioned music a bunch of times, and we were talking before we hit record about both being music lovers, but what was some of the stuff you were playing when you're doing your max effort bends back in the day?
Oh man, it's always like Terror, Spit My Rage. Like, if you want to really freaking go off to that place, that can do it. Lots of Cannibal Corpse, nice. Cro-Mags, just anything metallic and hard.
Are you a Age of Quarrel or Best Wishes or all of it?
I'm, dude, the first Cro-Mags exposure I ever got was Age of Quarrel on LP.
Yeah.
Friend of mine in high school was like, "Hey man, listen to this."
Yeah,
and I went home and it was like, "Phew." Like, yeah, I didn't even know stuff like that existed back then. You know?
Right, right, yeah. And Mackie is as drummers, that dude might be the best for that type of stuff. Like, it's that opening track and like the way he like hits the snare and just like the pop of and the space. It's like insane. It's so sick.
Love it.
I love Best Wishes too, but I think Age of Quarrel like puts it over. And it, and people get into like debating who's the better singer or whatever, but there's like something, I like Harley's voice too, and it's kind of cool on Best Wishes, but the way JJ sings on Age of Quarrel, man, it's like just a whole different thing than like punk and hardcore. Like, you can tell he was into like Motown and stuff like that. If you really listen, he like his phrasing and obviously the HR influence, but like that's just a crazy album, and I've spent a ton of time like dissecting it over this last year. So I'm like going off on a tangent with it, but one of the best ever, if not the best ever hardcore album.
One of the best ever, and I'll still spin that today. Like, I could upstairs right now and throw it on and it would fit totally.
Awesome. And you mentioned a guy, you're a guy that always needs something. What's the thing these days? What's got you, what is the pursuit these days? Anything?
Oh, I still skateboard a little bit.
Nice,
You know, I'm making business decisions with that. You know, I don't want to, you know, have a TBI and then, you know, can't go to work. So you know, I work with my brain and my hands. So I still skate, but I used to downhill some. And I like that, you know, try to go faster. And then you reach a point where you realize you're not really good enough to be kind of going that fast. You're probably lucky you haven't died already. So it's mostly just, you know, some kind of chill, medium downhill type stuff now. But
gotcha.
You know, to answer your question, I'm kind of at a point where I don't really have that. I'm working out more. I'm trying to get my deadlift up a little bit more. Doing some grip, you know, just trying to stay moving and stay relative.
Hell yeah. We got to get you a set of the golden potatoes. Have you seen these things?
What's that?
They're these cool dudes out in like Washington State. They also have a podcast, and we did like a joint thing. But they have this grip implement that's like a cast potato, and they have this whole leaderboard for like, and it's a hard thing to do a lift with. So they have like a pull-ups record for these things and a deadlift and stuff. It's
cool.
Pretty cool. And it's a lot of fun. And people are like chasing these and a potato Denny stone lift.
Okay.
It's pretty neat. It's just like a fun grip implement, and their podcast is too.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll send you the link. It's cool.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. In closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show, if there's anyone that I haven't had?
Get EJ on.
That I'm working, man. Like, I'm working on it.
he showed up on Bender's Battlefield, and I know we're trying to wrap up here, but just real quickly.
Okay,
he showed up on Bender's Battlefield and was just bending stuff already that just wasn't what you would see someone new coming in bending. And so he got a little bit of a rough intro pin because it's all on video. So we're like, well, you know, what's going on? And then, you know, obviously, as it turned out, he's totally legit. And then he's a total monster. So at Beast in the East in 2012, he was warming up for the double overhand competition with Edge and Bolts.
Yeah. Oh my God.
He's warming up with those. Like, I can't even bend one of those. I'm like, how is that your freaking warm up?
Yeah.
He's a double overhand monster. He's a super strong dude.
Yeah.
Super great guy. He'd be great to have on the show.
Nice. Yeah. I've been in touch with him. His job has him kind of running all over the place. So we're going to get that one. That's definitely one that's still out there. There's a few guys that are like, I'm really trying for. So we'll get them eventually.
Have you spoken to Mike Renderly?
Yep, I have. Yeah, I check in with him here or there. He'll eventually happen too. I think I had Jed put in a good word for me too.
Ask him about his Cletus bend. We had a little like some other people coming on the board and saying, well, if you use these type of wraps, you're cheating. And if you do this and that, you're cheating. And so we called it cheating the feet. So Renderly shows up in a video in just his underwear with a horseshoe, no wraps, like no pants on, no leg padding, no nothing. He bends this shoe in his underwear, and the whole time he's got like a fake country accent he's using. He's talking about cheating the feet. It's the best. It's one of the best bending videos I've ever seen.
Oh man, I think someone else brought that up to me. I got to check that out.
That was epic, dude. And then I think he couldn't walk for about 3 days. He was like crushing the shoe down like a bare thigh. It was like,
oh man. All right. And tips and advice for beginner benders.
Yeah. I mean, just find what works for you. You know, you were talking about Don and his serene style. We talked about Carl and how he's had the longevity that he has. I'm talking about I needed that high off a bend, and don't be afraid to go down any one of those. Just, you know, do what feels good. Like if you like the high, then just know that the flame's going to burn bright and short, but that's okay if that's what you want. Just don't be afraid to be yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That makes sense. Definitely. All right. And where can people find you if they want to reach out, if you want to be found?
I have an Instagram account. It's Southside_AT.
Okay, cool.
If you're interested, might have something on there here and there.
Nice. All right, Andy. That's it, man. It was a blast talking to you. I knew we'd have a good time, but it was great.
Cody, thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. I'm gonna hit you up with those links, and we'll talk again soon, man.
Nice, man. Have a good night, brother.
You too. Bye.
Bye.